Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. I am so glad you decided to join me tonight for what should be a very exciting and interesting conversation about the upcoming presidential election. My guests tonight are some very intelligent, witty, articulate, and very well-versed individuals on this topic. I could not be more excited to have a Democrat, two independents, and two Republicans on the panel tonight. Get ready, get ready, get ready. It's about to go down center stage. But before we begin, we want to remind everyone that we are praying for the people and the families and friends and everyone basically affected by Hurricane Sandy. Our prayers go out to you, and we hope that everything gets straightened out up there really, really, really soon. Also, we have to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests tonight will not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or advertisers. With that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce my guests for tonight. Tonight we have Thelma Tormina. She is founder of the 912 Group out of Houston. We also have Mr. Chris Stevenson. He's writer for the Buffalo Bullet and various publications, magazines, and black newspapers. Also, we have Robert L. Woodson, Sr. He's founder and president for the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. And also we have Mr. Paul Stockert. He's ex-vice chairman for the Tarrant County Republican Party. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Center Stage.
Good evening.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Carrie.
Good evening. Mr. Woodson, are you with us?
I'm with you. Good evening.
Mr. Stockert, are you with us?
I am.
Okay. We're missing Kimberly Noor, but we're hoping she will join us shortly. Listen, you guys, we are down to our last 3 days of campaigning. I'm going to open tonight with the question, does anybody want to call the election at this point? Anybody? It's close. Everybody knows it's close. Some people say it's a dead tie. But does anybody feel that, you know, their guy is going to pull it out in the end, or is everybody pretty much not sure at this point?
I think Romney's going to win it, and it's not going to be that close.
Wow. Is that you, Mr. Stockert?
Yes, it is.
Why you say that?
Well, if you look at the polls, they've been edging in his direction. And also, you'll also notice that Barack Obama has never been at 50%. And for the incumbent, that is necessary, that he at least make 50%. Also, there's some history to go with this, and that is that if you Republicans have always won every election when the election day falls on November the 6th.
Okay.
There's one other kind of on-the-ground indicator that I think Romney will win is, this is Bob Woodson,
okay.
Cayuga County in Ohio is a real bellwether county, mm-hmm. and Barack Obama carried it by, I think, 270 votes last time, and the early voting so far, the Democrats are saying that the enthusiasm isn't there, and they are about 10% behind their anticipated turnout rate. I think that the one issue is the lack of enthusiasm on the part of people who supported him enthusiastically last election. That is a fact that I think that polls will not really reflect.
Let me tag team off of that. Also, what you have is you have the fact that when a party that's out of power has far more, they're far more enthusiastic, and Republicans are usually much more loyal voters. They're far more habitual voters than Democrats. There's a lot more get out the vote effort that is necessary for Democrats to show up. And there's a lot of people who voted for Barack Obama in 2008 who are not voting for him now because they're kind of over the sugar high of voting for the first black president, and they realized that a lot of that was just a bunch of hype. They saw now he now has a record to run on, and they know what they're voting for. So it's no longer, he's no longer in the abstract. We know what he wants to do. And so there's a definite line. I mean, the demarcation between the two ideologies couldn't be any more stark. Either you're going to vote for a more collectivist, more active government, or you're going to vote for a more constitutionally constrained government. And I think that's what Mitt Romney represents.
Oh, Chris Stevenson, what do you think?
I think we're in the days of the angry white male, but probably 50 times more so. All right, I'm reminded of the midterms of...
speak up just a little bit.
I'm reminded of the midterm election of 1994 as well as 2010. But this, some of the other commentators brought out that, there seemed to be a great Republican galvanization. But I think Democrats have always been able to come through without wearing it on their sleeves. You know what I'm saying? And, yeah, there's not going to be... It may not be as great a support as for Obama as there was before, but I think he will have enough to pull through.
Selma Termina.
I really don't know, Carrie. I think it's going to be pretty close. I think both sides are thinking that, our side is turning out because of the record turnouts, but after knowing what happened 4 years ago, I wouldn't dare call this race.
I found something online that said every modern president, starting with Dwight Eisenhower, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, Clinton, and George W. Bush, all had gotten a bigger share of the vote in their second bid for office than their first. That said, doesn't that look like Obama's in trouble?
If you look at, this is Paul, if you look at what happened to Jimmy Carter, it was the same way. It was very close all the way until the end. And then there was this landslide, and I think that's what you're going to see this time. The reason I say this, and I was one of the people that was saying that Obama was going to win a second term, because, first of all, we don't like to turn out our presidents too often. I mean, the last time, in modern times, we've only turned out two presidents, and that is Jimmy Carter and Bush the Senior. And both times there were extenuating circumstances as to why they were not asked back for a second term. In this case, if you look at the price of gas, the inflation, the economy in general, I just don't see how an incumbent president gets reelected with these kinds of numbers. I mean, 7.98% unemployment, it's not a winning combination. And people are noticing when they go to the store and you buy a few things, and I know I've noticed it. You go there, you buy a few things, and the cashier asks you for $150, and you're like, I don't have a basket full of groceries. I just got a few items. So, I mean, look, if he pulls it out, I'll be surprised. But I didn't start thinking that Mitt Romney was going to win until probably a month ago.
I think that was true of a lot of people. But it's very interesting as a sidebar. The Republicans have their John Sununu. And the Democrats have their Joe Lowry, who, as you know, came out today and said that all white people are going to go to hell. This is a man who gave the prayer at the inaugural the last time. And, this is a comic sideshow, but it's, everybody tries to get on television, I guess, and will do anything to make that happen. But that doesn't help.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry, finish.
It just doesn't help either side for the Sununu to say the things that he said about Colin Powell and that he voted for, endorse Obama because he's black. It's just, these kind of throwaway, stupid statements on both sides is just really not helpful.
Yeah, I've never seen a situation where black people... Well, I can't say that. I think maybe over the decades, black people have always somehow been expected to be not loyal towards blacks in any given office or whatever. And I think that's expected of us more than any other race or ethnic group. I think what's going on here because of that, especially because of the poverty tour, with in particular on the case of Cornel West, you got some, like, you know, you might have a, it's like a large family, you know, you got to have a segment of kids will say, well, yeah, you know, the mother made a great dinner. You might have some of those kids say, okay, when the next time she makes this, we're going to say it's lousy. We're not going to eat it. Okay.
Well, I'm not a great Cornel West fan, but I must say that he has a point, and so does Tavis Smiley. I think we're too monolithic. Black America is too monolithic in its voting patterns, and that's why we're not taken seriously, because white Republicans can win without the black votes, and Democrats can't win with them. So there really is no need. The fact that Obama can come before the Urban League, when he goes before gays, he talks about changing on marriage. He goes before Hispanics. He talks about the Dream Act. Before every other group, he offers them something. But when he comes to black, he says before the Urban League, just shut up, take off your slippers, put on your shoes, and go vote for me.
Well, there's a reason why he can say that.
Yeah.
Because he knows that's exactly what they're going to do. For all the bellyaching that I hear about their dissatisfaction with Barack Obama, he knows that they're going to vote for him. The Democrat Party takes blacks for granted because they know that, just like sheep to the slaughter, that they're going to roll to the polls and vote for whatever Democrat that they put up there. But see, I think what happened, and I said this in 2008 when Barack Obama won, I predicted that he was going to win because, first of all, the party did not like John McCain. So we weren't enthusiastic about him, and there was no way that we were going to be able to convince other people to vote for him. So many of us, myself included, went to the polls, we held our nose, and we voted for him. And then you had Barack Obama on the other side, and he was this new, you know, avant-garde kind of new thing. Wow, we're going to vote for our first black president. And, you know, I guess they thought they were voting for Sidney Poitier or, you know, Morgan Freeman, but really what they got was Al Sharpton with a better vocabulary. I mean, because his way of thinking is pretty much the same as Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or any of these other American-hating blacks who are always finding fault with America and see racism they find the pee of racism under 1,000 mattresses. You know, they're so busy with their hypersensitivity saying, oh, this John Sununu said this or this person said that. You know, the thing about racism prior to the Civil Rights Movement is that racism stopped us from doing things. This racism that we cry about is really, really nothing. I mean, it's like my feelings were hurt. That kind of thing. And we're so busy staring at this speck on the windshield and we're not looking at the road ahead. And we forget that we inherited, many of us inherited, a road that was made much clearer for us by all those who came before us. And so that's why I don't feel too sorry for them when I hear them talking about, well, the Republican Party takes us for granted, the Democrat Party takes us for granted. I would too. And the Republicans don't go after the black vote because they know they can't get it.
So you feel like the Democrats take the black vote for granted?
Absolutely. Yep. Why do they?
Yes.
They don't have to compete. You didn't see Obama taking any bus tours through any black communities. The only time he comes on Joyner's show and the others is election time.
Yeah, he doesn't have to compete for that vote.
No, he's appointed more Republican conservatives to his cabinet than he has blacks.
But see, some people would say, Mr. Stockard and Mr. Woodard, being a black Republican is like an oxymoron. I mean, you know,
most people just cannot
relate. And I'm sure
ignorant.
You all have dealt with that.
Yep.
Only somebody
like
ignorant
what
would say that. I usually don't like
to be appointed to the cabinet. I haven't seen it.
What'd you say?
Name a Republican conservative on his cabinet.
The defense secretary and Hunt, it was at the... who resigned and ran the governor of, what is it, Iowa? He appointed two Republicans to his cabinet, the one who resigned and then ran for president unsuccessfully. There were two. He held over the Secretary of Defense.
Huntsman was a ambassador, but I forget to what China.
Yeah, but he held over Secretary of Defense from the previous administration.
Gates,
yeah.
Well, he has tried to be bipartisan. He wanted to try to unify both parties.
But I wasn't talking about that. If you look at Bob Woodward's book, Bob Woodward certainly is no conservative, when he talks about when Obama met with Boehner and they had a deal struck, Obama then left and told him, listen, I won, you lost. And he changed the terms and made it impossible for John Boehner to sign off. And Woodward said that's when polarization set in. But Boehner came to the table ready to negotiate, but it was President Obama who changed the terms of it without going back to the negotiation and said, yeah, I won, you lost, so tough.
So polarization
started with him. It didn't start with the Republicans.
You don't really think that Obama was bipartisan. I mean, you don't really believe that, do you?
No, I don't. I don't. Because if you look at
I don't think he's socialist or communistic either, though.
He definitely is Marxist in his thinking. But if you look at the two positions that he had Republicans in, these were in non-policy-making positions. So there was really no bipartisanship because there was no threat that they would tamper with his agenda.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I find it interesting when the president was sitting in the Situation Room with his national security team, they were all white faces. And when I look at the same situation with Bush, you had Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. Interesting.
That is interesting. You can't escape that. But who on the left can Obama trust that's black that could be on the on a national security? Who would you appoint?
How many members of the Congressional Black Caucus did he interview for any top level job? Even interview. And so you see, these are further proof that they can take blacks for granted. But I think, again, the Achilles heel was the gay marriage. According to a Zogby poll, 18% of black Americans are undecided now.
What percentage?
18% are undecided.
Wow.
Undecided. And I think that undecided is a direct result of this gay marriage piece. I know that a lot of the pastors, we have a referendum on the Maryland ballot for a constitutional amendment that will ban gay marriage or support it, so that's going to be voted on. But prominent young pastors from mega churches here in Maryland, John Jenkins and Harry Thomas and others, are vehemently opposed to it, and I think there's going to be a big kind of vote. They're either going to stay home in the national elections, but they're going to vote against this proposition in Maryland. So I think the gay marriage issue is on the ballots in three states, and that is some blacks are going to be reminded of what his stance are on gay marriage.
But I think that should cause a schism in the church, really, because these pastors are forgetting what percentage of gays make up their congregations.
It doesn't matter whether or not they're gays in their congregation. There are a lot of pastors are just biblical, and they don't see it that way. So I don't think that's being hypocritical. I mean, you can have a gay in your family and still not believe that gay people, that marriage ought to be defined by gays. That's nothing to do with it. Phyllis Schlafly's son is gay, and that didn't change her position. She just said, I'm still against it.
So ultimately,
that's totally hypocritical. If some of that Cadillac money is being paid for by them also, you understand?
I don't understand what you're saying.
These preachers, Reverend Chicken Wings and Reverend Hog Marks got to start thinking now, because
what he's saying is
you don't want these piano players and choir boys putting their heads together. I mean, no pun intended.
What he's saying, if they're putting money in the plate, then why should he have a problem with them? But I see what you're saying. One has nothing to do with the other.
I mean, there are pastors and there are pastors. There are some who are biblically committed to that. But the very fact that, let's take this out further, the very fact that Hillary Clinton can say as a consequence, as a consequence of national policy, that foreign aid now will not be given to countries who don't embrace that agenda. And when you talk to the ambassador of countries like Jamaica and Nigeria and other countries who have objections to that, that the United mm-hmm. States is now going to dictate to say there's a condition of foreign aid that you have to comply with that?
Well, some of those countries are actually executing gays. That's the problem. Okay.
I'm talking you name me one country who is executing gays. First of all, that when you I think you're talking about
Iran is a one.
Iran executes gays.
Yes,
they hang them.
I'm talking about Africa. You're talking about Uganda. I'm not talking about the Middle East. I'm saying Uganda. That was just proposed by a member of parliament. It was never official policy of Uganda to do that.
But there are countries that do that. Not only do they execute them,
there are Muslim countries that do.
Yeah, and then
in Africa.
You name me one.
You just named Uganda,
That was a myth. That was a lie they told about Uganda. It was really a member of Uganda Parliament had proposed it, and he was voted down. It was never a part of the country's policies to do that.
Well, Iran does it. Iran does it.
There's a history of them doing that.
What?
Iran does that.
I said Africa, and you told me that I told you name me one country in Africa that does it.
Yeah, right.
And you can't name it a country in Africa. Yeah, Middle East. They shoot girls for trying to go to school.
Right.
If you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight for the discussion, Who's Getting Your Vote on Election Day? We're talking with my guests, Robert L. Woodson, Chris Stevenson, Selma Tormina, and Paul Stockard. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.africanamericannewsandcommentary.com. Let me ask a question. You all are speaking of Barack Obama's support for gay marriage, and also he supported or repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So ultimately, as far as the black vote is concerned and the Christian vote is concerned, don't you think he's going to take a significant hit for his stance on those issues?
Absolutely.
A significant
hit? He's taking it. Okay, he's taking it. Well, you know, Obama is giving gays a twofer, so to speak, because like you said, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law and the approval of gay marriage. He has not come out, like you say, for blacks, or as he has for women and gays, because Obama believes in this philosophy called post-racial liberalism. That's his biggest weakness, okay? And he, you know, it's a theory based on delusionism, but you know, he runs with this, and maybe hopefully in the second term he can come out a little bit more forward. You know, what black one of the main things we need is a anti-racial profiling law, something comprehensive, just like the new motor carriers law that came out a few years ago. All right, it's got to be thorough and it's got to be enforced, and it has to be a thing where you can police officers now have to have a license to be an officer, and they could be tracked, okay, and they could be penalized if they do these things, if they do these this profiling and arresting and, you know, brutal stuff that they've been doing and shootings and everything.
Do you really believe that racial profiling and police shooting people is a major issue in America when we have 19 young people killed by other black 19 people in Chicago over a weekend? We have a 9/11. We have a 9/11. 3,000 young blacks are killed by other blacks every 6 months.
You know,
that's a 9/11 every 6 months. And you tell me our problem is racial profiling?
Yes. You know how much corrupt police is responsible indirectly for those shootings. You realize that the ramparts...
Wait a minute. You're telling me that white police are responsible for blacks shooting other blacks?
They are very divisive.
Well, explain that one to me.
Number one, they've been supplying arms to some of these kids.
They supply arms.
Oh, I see. So the white police are giving guns to the kids, and that's why they're killing
one
another. Okay,
I'll give you some results. When they cleaned up the department in South Central, they went from like 400 murders a year to like 29 one year. Okay, that means they got rid of a lot. They got rid of most of their problem cops. All right. As a direct result,
don't you think maybe they got some better cops?
Exactly.
And maybe that solved
it. They got better. Yeah. So that's it. That's the whole issue right there. When you do this, you're going to see crime drop dramatically.
You know what? You kind of argue all of these things, but in reality, the truth is the Democratic Party's been using the black vote for a very long time, and they've been using the black population for a very long time. I'm amazed at how many people do not recognize the fact that the politicians, the Democratic side, and the black civil rights leaders in this country currently have stolen the American dream from the black young. And I don't know why y'all keep putting up with it. I really don't.
Thank you.
This is a country where anybody can make it if they want to, but they've taken and they've stolen that dream from the black population, and that is wrong. And until we correct that, the blacks will stay in poverty in the urban environments that the Democrats have put them in.
Can you blame that on the Democratic Party?
Yes, I do.
Yes, it is true.
You know,
most of the murders and the mayhem that we're seeing in urban centers and areas run by the Democratic administrations.
Hello, Chicago.
New York. I mean, not New York.
Detroit.
Kwame Kilpatrick is an example. Why isn't there national outrage? Why isn't Sharpton in there demonstrating in Detroit when Kwame Kilpatrick stole all of the pension money through corruption? Hundreds of thousands of dollars in black pensioners who are retiring without money, and he is stolen all of this money, and yet there's no outcry.
Because law enforcement beat him to it.
right here in Prince George's County, Maryland, we have a county executive and his wife, he's serving, I think, 13 years. He's sitting in a hotel room counting corrupt bribe money, and what he says is that, I have to be careful because white people are out to take down black leaders. As he's counting $1,500 worth of bribe money.
Well,
yeah,
you know what?
I remember, it's true.
I'll give you that. We've gone from civil rights leaders to silver rights leaders. That is a problem.
Well, what you have really is an inability to be honest with ourselves about what part of our problem is our problem. And
part
of our problem is white people's problem. And I think that what we're hearing from the gentleman, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Bob Woodson?
What we're hearing mostly from you is that most of this is white people's problems. All our problems stem from white racism. I'm sorry, I got your name. I didn't mean you. I meant the other gentleman.
No.
Chris Stevenson?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And so what you have is you have this over-blaming and never taking any responsibility for the parts that are ours. And I think this is where why you don't see blacks embracing conservative principles, because conservatism embraces the individual and personal responsibility, and whereas in liberalism over on the Democrat side, they are very good at supporting blacks, but they don't respect them.
No.
Well, you know,
I agree
like
with
somebody
that.
Said white
under,
people... White people love their slaves like they love their dogs. They just didn't respect them as human beings.
Here's the thing. Slavery was a bad thing, and we all know it, and we've all recognized it. But there is an entire population of adults who have grown up past the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
We look at everybody as equal. We don't understand why... The blacks in this country will not look at the opportunities that they are given. They would rather blame the past than to go on with the future. And your leaders keep putting that into your heads and the young children's heads No one stops anyone from being successful except for themselves. Every man that was successful in this country failed at least three or four times before they ever became a success. And nobody is wishing for any color, skin color, to have more trouble than another. And nobody is asking any skin color to suffer more than any other. We are so far past that, and Barack Obama has brought racism full bore, full circle back in till it's disgusting what he has done to this country.
So you're saying Barack's a racist?
He is.
In some ways he is. Because
how a man who tries to avoid the race issue is a racist?
Pardon me?
Barack who tries to avoid the race issue is a racist?
Can I give an
example?
He doesn't
avoid it. He's out there pushing it every day of the week.
He is not pushing it.
Oh, yeah, he is.
The problem with black leadership today, you guys are going to hate my reply on this, but is that white people pick most of the black leaders. That's the problem. That's why we're not getting the things we need.
If that were true,
most of our elected officials is our selected officials. That's it.
They are not.
Sharpton made a bad turn years ago after Tawana Brawley. All right.
Well, then why don't you guys get rid of him?
I don't think the black population. Al Sharpton does not speak for me. So when y'all keep calling him a leader, who is he leading? Because he does not speak for me.
But
so,
he's leading a lot of blacks.
Okay.
Yep, really.
I'm talking about elected officials. Most of our elected officials are selected officials.
Well, we know all
the folks. I've seen that, especially here in Buffalo.
Okay.
All right. That's just
the way
it is.
Yeah, but that's true even of the whites. They're selected, and naturally that's the term you use because those are the ones who people have pushed forward as someone who is, I don't know, in the know or has the experience. When the comment was made about why aren't there more or why wasn't there black put into a position of power like over Homeland Security or something, why isn't Obama going into the black community and looking for someone who can fill that slot rather than going looking for a woman who doesn't know what she's doing and put her in there?
Oh.
I mean, you can't blame that on the whites.
Anybody got a reply to that?
No, she's right about that. I mean, again, we are the most marginalized. My office is at 16th and K Street. That's in the middle of all the law firms in Washington and all of the white lobby firms. Every one of those law firms and lobby firms have a Democratic desk and a Republican desk. So whoever wins, they are going to win. We are the only people who being a Democrat is synonymous with our racial identity. It has gotten so bad and it doesn't matter what a Democrat does when they're in office, whether they're corrupt or incompetent, we are going to vote them back in. Members of the Black Caucus were stealing money that was supposed to go to low-income people in their districts. They were giving it to the staff members, to grandkids and everything. It wasn't a scandal. Not a single one of them that stood for re-election was ever challenged on that.
The problem isn't that it's not that blacks are too many blacks are Democrats. It's that too many blacks are unfocused. Okay. Do you think we should have a third party? Do you think
no? We need needs to be none of us. We are not happy with monopolies. We would be unhappy if there was just one kind of chicken, fried chicken store. We'd be unhappy if there was one supermarket. We'd be unhappy if there was just Starbucks and nothing else. Monopolies corrupt.
Well, just look at the
political monopolies corrupt as well.
Two is attended and one Democrat. You know,
may I make a point?
We have separate views right here on this on this panel. Okay.
So that shows that all black people think alike, y'all. Because we
that's
got
not unhealthy because we have different views. That's the point.
Yes. But you know something, white people have different views also, but when it comes to politics, when it comes to race, they think white most of the time. All right.
I bet.
Tell me what thinking white is. What is thinking black?
Yeah.
Tell me. Explain that one to me. Please explain to me what it means to think white and what does it mean to think black.
There are white people today. They might say, okay, we're going to go see this movie, and another white guy will say, I'll go see that movie. When it comes to who they're going to vote for, I'm voting for Romney. They both voting for Romney. More 9 times out of 10, that's what you're going to get.
What is wrong
you
with you?
You think Obama would be president if white people didn't vote for him? Why did these people in Iowa vote for Obama then? Why weren't they racist when they voted for him the first time around?
And if you haven't noticed, there's an awful lot of stupid whites that are out there pushing for him now.
You know who pushed Obama in Iowa?
Who?
Oprah.
Well, what does that got to do with
their next door neighbor in Illinois?
Why would they listen to Oprah then? Why would they listen to Oprah according to your premise here?
Oprah is one of the whitest shows on TV. She had one of the whitest shows on TV. What are you talking about?
You know, you're confusing me. Maybe I'm just not smart enough to understand
how many times have you seen George Clinton on Oprah Winfrey? Name it. How many times have you seen the last poet on Oprah Winfrey?
What Chris is saying, though, is Oprah show catered to a white audience, is what he's saying.
Everybody.
But if they were so racist and they think white, why would they be fooled by that? Why would they care?
I just can't believe you see all these whites on TV, these white liberals who believe in the Marxist cause or the communist cause, and they are all backing Obama, and they're teachers, and they're union workers, and you're
exactly.
sitting here
so
telling
they,
me
they,
that it's black.
I'm not taking credit away from them. Obama's going to hurt, just like he did in 2008, the white male is not going to vote for him, by and large.
Oh, don't say that. Do you know how many people I know that are white males that are voting for Barack Obama? Don't say that.
I'm not saying they're not there. I'm saying they're not. The majority are going to vote for Romney.
Right.
Well,
I would hope so,
because
if American doesn't vote for Romney, we're going to lose our freedom and we're going to lose what America is meant to be. So it's just that simple. It has nothing to do with color.
Romney, you're voting for Romney?
Am I?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I don't like the Marxist government we have right now. I cherish my freedom.
You want to vote for an open open job killer who wants to have rights over your body.
Excuse me? Lost your mind? No.
That's
what you get if you want vote for Romney.
I think what Chris is saying is that Romney wants your uterus, and
a woman is defined by her uterus.
Okay.
Women's interests are limited by their uterus, right? They're not concerned about jobs
or income, it's defined by their uterus, right? Wanted your uterus.
You know something? I'm actually embarrassed for you.
I've actually
become embarrassed for you with some of, because now I went to your website and read some of your writings, so I knew the kind of stuff that was floating around in your head, and we've just given you enough time to actually voice that, and I just want to, you know, do you hear yourself?
Yes, I do. I'm trying to warn you all. If there's a storm coming, if there's a hurricane coming, I'm going to let you know. Right now, Romney's a hurricane.
I really thought I was going to have to come on here and defend conservatism, but this is not even really a debate, because you're not even debating me at a level with which I'm actually having to try. Your arguments
what level,
are so,
what level
are
you,
so
you want to debate on? Let's talk about the Romney family.
And all you see is racism everywhere. I really don't know if I have anything to contribute to this conversation.
Are
you telling me that racism is over?
No, if you believe that white people can exercise that kind of control over you, then you do embrace racism. You believe in white supremacy.
They don't exercise that kind of control.
You
guys
you
are taking
believe
this whole
in
thing
white supremacy,
out of
and we don't. You believe that white people
white
are so powerful that they can compel us to do things that are against our interest.
White supremacy is as real as the National Basketball Association.
You are embracing the premise of white supremacy, my brother.
Let me make one other point.
Okay.
The problem with this way of thinking is that it requires you to twist yourself in some type of intellectual pretzel. I mean, you really have to work hard to believe in all of this stuff. And I used to be like you, and actually I was better at it than you are. And the problem is that I don't even believe that you believe what you say, what you pontificate. Because,
now, why don't you think he believes what he says?
We've done is go from Jim Crow to James Crow escrow.com. That's all we've done. And
he loves these little phrases, these little catchphrases and things like this. But the truth is that he's claiming you're claiming a suffering that you never suffered. And this is the problem I have with this suffering vicariously through others, is that you never picked a bowl of cotton in your life.
I'm 54.
You probably grew up very
middle
class.
How do you know about my suffering?
What do you know
about my suffering?
Hey, look, you know something? It doesn't matter, man. It wasn't that hard for you. We all have things we had to come over. I had kids throwing rocks at me saying I was nigger. You know, in the first grade when they first desegregated schools, just because they desegregated didn't mean white people liked them. But you know something? I didn't let that define me. I mean, it must be hard. It must be heavy carrying that chip on your shoulder all the time. Is it really heavy?
It's not a chip. It's not a reality. That's all there is to it. It's there.
Yeah.
Okay?
You know,
and that's why
carrying such a chip exempts you from any personal responsibility for doing anything. Because if you screw up, it's because of what white people did.
Hey, one at a time.
I said that carrying a chip on your shoulder and blaming white people for everything is an exemption from personal responsibility. Because if you have any failings or shortcomings, you don't have to take responsibility for it. You can just say, well, it's not my fault. And you can find something that white people did in the past or in the present that explains why you're not competitive or why you didn't get something you think you deserve.
Listen, a reminder, chat room is down tonight. If you are in the listening audience and want to add to this conversation, you need to get on the phone line. The phone number to call in is 347-850-8390. Again, if you're in the chat room is down tonight, or trying to get in the chat room is down tonight. So if you have a question or a comment or want to add to the discussion in any way, get on the phone line and dial us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. Listen, let's switch it up a little bit. In light of the Trayvon Martin shooting and some other high-profile shootings that we've seen as of late, how important is gun control in this election, and which candidate basically is addressing gun control in the way that you like to see it?
Gun control
for me, this is Bob Woodson, gun control to me is a steady aim. Because I'm not for gun control, and I spend a lot of my time in low-income neighborhoods helping gang members to settle disputes. So I'm on the front line of that, and I can tell you that the presence or absence of guns is not the issue. It's the attitude that causes people to pick up either a gun, a knife, a baseball bat. So that's what we have to address. In some countries, Sweden, I think, everybody is required to have a gun.
Yep.
And you don't have the murder rate. Guns don't create killers, and drugs don't create drug dealers and drug addicts. It's the values of the people. I said I was at a black-on-black conference in Philly. There are areas of my hometown, Philadelphia, same income demographic, that are Orthodox Muslim, black Orthodox Muslims, and other communities of black Orthodox Christians, I mean fundamentalist Christians, and you don't see killings in those neighborhoods, and you don't see drugs. Why? Because of the values of the people living there. So the crisis is a crisis of values. It is not a crisis of the presence or absence of guns.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Question, how those guns got in those communities?
Oh,
what difference does it make? If I put a gun on the table in front of you, would you go grab it and shoot somebody?
Have you ever questioned how those guns, most of those guns were military?
I don't care how the guns got there. I'm asking you, if I were to put a gun or a bag of heroin on the table, would that cause you to pick up that gun and become a drug dealer? Would it? I'm asking you.
No.
Okay, then why?
No.
What is different about you than anybody else then?
But Mr.
I've never understood this question. You know, everybody doesn't take responsibility.
So if you put a gun in front of the wrong person, say someone who has, you know, mental illness or someone who is high on drugs or, you know, so that, I mean, it is of our concern to know
We have the most restrictive gun control laws in Washington, D.C., and so the drug dealers were killing people with aluminum baseball bats.
Okay.
I mean, so it doesn't matter how someone shoot, what they use to kill, it's the killing of people, the taking of a life that we have to address.
And he's right. It's the moral.
Do you know when the guns and the drugs were funneled into the black community?
Oh, stop it.
That history?
Stop it.
Do you understand?
That
do you understand
isn't
that
the
history?
Issue.
You have
that
any proof? Do you have any proof of that? Do you have any proof of that, or is this another one of your conspiracies?
Do you remember what happened during the mid-80s, mid to late 80s, early 90s?
That isn't the
issue.
Do
you know how the drugs and the guns? Do you know how the drugs and the guns came into the community?
Does it really matter? No matter how it's brought in,
you mean the moral?
Your little method of trying to solve problems without knowing the history is cute, but right now it's not amusing. It's not.
One of you tell me the history.
Why don't you get off blaming white people?
In 1954, we had 96,000 blacks in prison, and today we have 900,000. Now, you're going to tell me that racial discrimination has gotten worse, and that is because of a flow in guns, we've had that jump? Or is it related to the fact that back in 1954, 85% of all black families had a man and a woman raising children, and today we only have 30% families, and therefore children are being socialized not by fathers but are being socialized
that's
by gangs and others.
That's very true. Also, I'm not going to dismiss that. That's very true.
Okay, well then, but there's. So that, and even during the 10 years of the Depression between 1930.
Okay, y'all, we're going to have to get to the phone line. Selma, did you want to address gun control before we moved on?
No, the only thing I was going to say is that he's right. It's the moral makeup of this country. It doesn't have anything to do with the guns itself. If the moral fiber of this nation would get back to what it was, we do need mothers and fathers raising our children. And the black community, more than the white community, this is true. Ever since they introduced welfare and they started pushing the fathers out of the households in the black communities, that's when you saw these kids turn to the streets. The guns isn't the issue. We need the guns in this country or we'll end up in tyranny. That's a fact. This isn't about protecting your stuff. It's protecting your freedom that we have the Second Amendment for.
Yeah, let me give one quick example to make this argument. In 14 years ago, in an area of Washington, D.C. called Benning Terrace, there's five square blocks, there were two warring factions, the Avenue and the Circle. They accounted for 52 murders in 2 years in a five-block area. What we did was train five young men who were ex-offenders but who had come to Christ, who had the influence of the kids, and when a 12-year-old boy was killed there, I trained them in intervention. They went into that community, brought 16 members of this gang, eight on either side, to my office downtown Washington. We negotiated a truce. Those young men went back to that same community, transformed, and got paid to remove the graffiti. We did not have a single murder, a gang murder, in 12 years in that community. By just reaching the leadership and redirecting the lives of those people. So we didn't have gun control that stopped, that reduced those 53 murders. We went in there with a moral imperative and provided these young men with an alternative. And so there is an example of how you can reduce violence, not by taking guns from them, but causing them to put the guns down.
Where are the factories that in the black community that make these guns? I missed them. I knew you guys probably.
Let me just respond to my example of how we reduce violence.
I gave you a concrete and specific example.
We're going to go to the phone line, Joe, because we'll be all night on that subject. If you just tune in, you come center stage for the discussion. Who's giving your vote on Election Day Part 2? We're talking to my guests, Robert Woodson Sr., Chris Stevenson, Selma Tormina, and Paul Sarkert. We're going to go to area code 317-997. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hello. I just wanted to throw my 2 cents in. My vote will be going to Gary Johnson as far as the presidential election is concerned.
And you will be wasting your vote.
Who is Gary Johnson?
Gary Johnson is the Libertarian candidate, and those who are voting for Larry Johnson are just having intellectual masturbation. It'll make you feel good, but you're doing absolutely nothing.
And you are by voting for anybody else?
I'm voting for – is Gary Johnson going to win? Do you think he's actually going to win?
Do you think anyone's actually going to change anything?
Your vote is going to do nothing. If you vote for Gary Johnson, you're voting for Barack Obama. I just want you to know that. You'll feel good voting for Gary Johnson, but you're helping to elect Barack Obama.
Well, everybody on the Obama side says that I'm going to be voting for Romney if I vote for Gary Johnson. So what gives?
You know,
Johnson is like staying at home. So that I don't mind that.
Yeah. Either one. I mean,
I'll vote for Obama.
Thank you, caller. So one vote for Gary Johnson.
Whoever that is.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go to area code 402-972. Good evening. You're on center stage. I think 402-972.
Yes. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm well. It's good to see that you're back on the air.
Well, thank you.
You know, I missed you.
Well, thank you.
Pretty much that's all I had to say. I mean, I'm listening to this conversation, and it's really mental masturbation as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't make a difference.
Who are you voting for?
Neither.
That guy got two telephones with
him. Neither. Hello?
Who are you voting for?
Neither. I'm not buying
neither.
Neither.
You're not even voting in this election.
No, not in this one. No.
Why?
Is there a reason why you're
not? I'd like to know why.
From all of what I'm looking at and reading and listening to, as far as both candidates, neither one of them are saying anything that's going to make what I consider a significant change.
Okay, now let's chase him down a minute. What would you like? What if you were president? What would you like to see done specifically?
Well, I'd like to. I definitely like to see the elimination of the drone program. The drone program. That's one. Number two, I like equal distribution of opportunities for everyone, not just a segment of a population.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, you get rid of all the bureaucracy that goes along with the politics, whether it be in the Senate or the Congress.
You realize they can't redistribute the way you want it to.
He asked me a question and I didn't finish answering. Now, the last thing I would want, if this was possible, is for those who have a lot of money, especially a lot of power, that are behind the scenes that you really don't hear too much about, to be eliminated out of controlling how the government is run. So if I were president, because he said yes, this is a hypothetical question, if I was, that's what I would want to eliminate. Now, to the lady's response, as far as, well, we can't eliminate it. First of all, I know I did hear the lady state talking about morals, I guess, and values of this country. First of all, the United States government or the United States itself was never moral since it was founded. That's historical fact. It was always and has always and will continue to be immoral because the way it was founded on the soil when they took it and stole it and raped those people who were already here on this particular soil. That's historical fact. You can debate
it. That's not true. That is not true. You need to learn your history. That is not true.
I know my history.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
When was it that the atrocities against the Indians started, or Native Americans?
When the Europeans had got to the soil.
We're talking about the founding of this nation. We're talking about the founding of this nation, not the discovery of the land. We're talking about the founding.
You're talking about the founding of a nation after it was stolen from
people
who already
were here. In other words, the Native Americans were here first. However,
exactly.
the founding of the nation that we know as the United States of America that started when the Europeans came, basically, and established.
And if she's saying, I would like to also put this point out there. If she's saying that that's not true, then is she also saying that when slavery was in existence at that time of Africans, is she saying that wasn't wrong?
Slavery
and that,
but wait,
oh,
wait. When did
existed.
Slavery start?
Oh, okay.
Give me
I
that again.
You're wasting your absolute time trying to convince him otherwise.
You really are. This is
I asked her a question. She asked me a question.
No,
wait a minute.
I wonder how many realize.
Let him finish.
I'm being as respectful as I possibly can. She asked me a question, and I asked her a question. Now, I asked her a question. My question would to her is, if she believes, and I believe she does, that the United States, in the way it was not founded in on a moral ground, then are you also saying, in that same breath, that the slavery was not an immoral act as well, because since, you know, the Native Americans lost their – they're not even Americans. Indigenous people lost their land because it was stolen. Are you also saying that those people who were mistreated when they were brought here in chains and shackles were not mistreated, and that was a bold-faced lie too?
You know, the only thing is, if we get into this, we're going to go far off the subject.
Thank you, Black Man.
I apologize, but
that's okay. Thank you.
I just
okay. 314-381. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
It's Pianki.
Hey, Pianki. How are you?
And you got a lot of things out there tonight.
We're going all over the page tonight. How do you want to add to the discussion tonight, Pianki? We're on part two. You were part of part one. What do you think of the discussion so far?
Well, you know, I'm for Second Amendment rights, both concealed carry and open carry.
Ooh.
And, you know, the guy said about throwing broke votes away, if that can apply to blacks in Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina voting for Democrats, too. They just throwing their votes away for a president because they're never going to happen. Not in our time, at least. And
what's not going to happen?
Well, what he's saying is that in those conservative states, if you're a Democrat,
yeah,
your vote
true.
Obviously, like if you're in Texas and you're a Democrat, you can go vote for Barack Obama, but he's not going to benefit from any of the votes, the Democrat
votes
in this state.
The same could be said
for California, for Republicans living in California.
I would leverage my vote with a Republican in those states. You probably have, especially on local and state and local level, you'd probably get more, well, you surely get more out than going for voting for a Democrat on a national level at this time.
But you said something that I don't hear much about, particularly in black folks, and that is leveraging. And that is we don't associate voting for people with outcomes from those people. It's almost like we vote blacks into office so they can become rich celebrities. And then,
yeah, right.
I mean, and we don't hold them accountable for doing anything that to address some of the problems, particularly dealing with some of the problems concerning low-income blacks.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as president, I would vote for a libertarian also, because I've seen this stuff long enough to know that either one of them is very hard-headed. If I was president, I would get rid of the Department of Education. I would get rid of, I would cut the defense budget by at least $4 trillion in the next 10 years. I would do away with the monetary system as we see it. I would do away with the Federal Reserve and let the U.S. Treasury take over that responsibility, because just this year you're going to pay Federal Reserve $257 billion, in interest. If you were doing that yourself, you wouldn't have to pay that. I would do away with the EPA. I would make some drastic changes to it. Also, with the rechange the capital gains tax, Obama wanted to kick it up to 43.4%. I think that's ludicrous. And, you know, just starting off there would make enough people mad. I would be, my phone would be ringing off the hook.
But, you know, I'd like to just to deal with one aspect of what you said. And I think those, at least they're thoughtful proposals. I don't agree with them, but they're thoughtful. One can discuss things. And it's not irrational. But, you know, people are talking about, well, the rich are rich and we need to redistribute. But John Kerry and Kennedy some years ago, if you remember, passed this luxury tax. We were going to tax the rich by putting heavy taxes on, I think, yachts and also luxury automobiles. And that was going to really help to soak the rich. Well, what happened is the rich people stopped buying yachts and they stopped buying luxury cars. And guess what happened? A lot of blue-collar workers lost their jobs by the thousands that make those products. After 2 years, Kennedy and Kerry quietly got that tax rescinded. Because in a capitalist system, people with money take it and spend it on things that others buy, and thus jobs are created.
Well, you know, Obama just put a tax on tanning parlors. So I guess white women are going to start getting tans now. They can just go lay out on the beach.
That's right.
I don't
try to buy a 16-ounce soda in New York City anymore.
They just buy two 8-ounce sodas then.
I mean, the whole principle that government should regulate what we do and change our behavior and force us to do things that we don't want to do or compel. I mean, but that is a mindset of governance that Obama believes in.
Now, on the other hand, real quick. We all know that race do play a picture, because I've seen Representative Meeks of the 6th. The congressional district in New York complaining that his people haven't got any water, no attempts to remove trash, and, you know, since Hurricane Sandy. And the other things that other communities are getting, especially, and he's there in Queens. So, you know, it's just a reality that I don't think we should get away. I think we should get away from complaining. We need to be doing more things for ourselves so we don't have to depend on these entities that we've been dependent on for so long.
Yeah, but this is being done by a so-called liberal mayor who he was forced to stand down for not having the marathon there.
Mm-hmm.
This man was
Nixon, black unemployment has been under 10% more times, more months, you know, than it ever have been under Democrats up until even this president we have. So people need to start putting demands, leveraging their votes. I'm saying African-Americans, just like other ethnic groups do, and stop blindly voting for Democrats. It just don't make any sense.
I agree with you. That's the intelligent way to do it.
Well, let's talk about the vote a little bit, because for those of us that's getting really confused about this popular vote, versus the electorate vote. Mr. Stocker, please explain to us, in a close election like this one, why is it that our vote really doesn't count in the end if the vote is really close?
Well, you would have to understand the purpose of the Electoral College, and that is that it would, being that you need 50 plus 1% to win. So during the time when there were only 13 colonies, you know, each state is awarded electors by its population. So, and I can't remember how many for every district that you have, that's one electoral vote. So, and then you get two, everybody gets two state senators, and you get two electoral votes for that. So each state is worth a certain amount of votes. You need, in our case, you need 270 to win. So what happens is that if you win the popular vote in that state, you are usually awarded all the electoral votes. I think there are only two states that proportion their electoral votes. One of them is Maine, and I can't think of the other one. But usually if you win the popular vote in that state, you get all the electoral votes. And what it does is that it makes politicians have to go to some of these non-populous states. In other words, if they had to just get the popular vote, they would only go to population centers like Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, and they wouldn't necessarily go to places like Wyoming, some of those other states in the upper West, which have only like one congressman because they have just that, so few people living there. And so, you know, if Mitt Romney is needing, if both of them are needing 270, and they say, well, maybe I need to go to Wyoming because I could use those three electoral votes. That was the idea behind it. Well, if you live in a state that, in this case, if you live in a state that is definitely a red state or a blue state, if you're voting the opposite of your state's population, your vote really doesn't, I won't say it doesn't, it goes towards the popular vote, but it really isn't helping your candidate win.
Doesn't count.
No, it doesn't. No, not in reality, no, it doesn't.
And so that's what the whole, I mean, that's why I think a lot of people are just like, forget it this year, because it's looking close, just like it did with Gore and Bush, you know, that presidential election. And I think people are thinking, I'm just not going to buy into that this year because my vote is not going to count, which is really sad.
It is a better system than using a straight Democratic way of
it really
doing it
is.
Because if that's the case, if we had to do a recount, exactly how would we do a recount for the entire country?
Well, and it's not only that. What a lot of people miss, Carrie, is that if we went by strictly popular vote, then majority rules, and majority rules is mob rules. That's why democracies are not the best sort of governing that you can have, because the minority loses out when you're not a republic and represented by something like an electoral college. The minority loses out, and the term minority has been used as far as skin color or certain groups or whatever, but a minority really is the lesser of the population, and if you have mob rule, then anything goes. If it goes with the sway of the populace. In other words, abortion may not have been something that was prevalent in the past, but the majority of them want it now. So those who oppose abortion are overruled by those that do. And in a lot of ways, that's how our Supreme Court, even though they say they're not affected by the populace, they definitely were, although they were looking at the argument in a different way. You need that electoral college. You need it, otherwise you're a democracy.
Let me ask that.
I want to explain how you pick the people that go to the electoral college.
At each
state, they have their own state convention, just like you have a national convention. They have a state convention. So Republicans and Democrats have their separate conventions. And when they're picking people who go to the national convention, one of the things they do in those caucuses, when they caucus together, is that they also pick people who are going to go to the electoral college. So you're broken up by your congressional district. So let's say I live in congressional district 24. All the people from congressional district 24 get together in a room, and after they pick the people who go to the national convention, several people will get nominated to be the elector for that district. So you stand up there and you make a speech and you say, hey, I'd like to be the elector to the Electoral College, and let me tell you why. And then usually it goes down. You know, it's an elimination process, so if there's more than one person, the person with the lowest vote gets dropped out until it's just two. And the person who gets 50.1%, they're the person that gets to go and represent that district.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Listen, are you guys in favor of eliminating the vote then?
I'm not following you. Am I in favor of eliminating the vote?
Yes.
The Electoral College?
No.
Is that what you
vote.
Am I in favor of eliminating the Electoral College?
No. The vote. The individual vote.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well, no. No, I don't. No, I'm not.
What's behind your question?
Because you said you sound like you're more in favor of the Electoral College than you
are.
I
have to have a vote. What? You have to have a vote before the Electoral College could kick in. But let me ask you a question.
How many of you are voting for Romney?
Well, I am.
I am
also.
How many of you belong to an electoral college?
How many of us are what?
Belong
how
to
many of you
college?
On this panel belong to an electoral college?
I have been the elector for my. I've done it one year. I did it for Bush in 2004.
Okay. Who else?
What does that have to do with anything?
Is that going to be your buzz tone for the rest of the conversation, ma'am?
How many of you are going to vote for Romney?
Listen,
how many of you belong to the electoral college? Please remove the mystery, tell me where you're going with this.
We already answered this question, so where are you going with this?
Most of you guys are hyping Romney. Then you're saying that you're in favor of the electoral college, which means you really don't want the vote. You don't want to see a vote.
You don't understand apparently what the electoral college was put there for. We're a republic. We are not a democracy. We never have been.
Well, what happens when the electoral vote? And I know the answer.
If you're pulling the lever next Tuesday, then we're a democracy.
No, we're not. We're a republic.
Yes, we are.
We live in a democratic society.
Well, what they have done,
right.
They classify
right.
being able to vote.
We
they
are
classify
not a
democracy.
We're a republic.
Is what they is. Let me
change it up, because we do something here in Texas that I have not done before, and I've lived in Illinois and I've lived in Tennessee. We do something called the Texas Two-Step. Again, Mr. Stocker, could you explain to them the
like
Texas Two-Step,
well,
which didn't make any sense to me, y'all,
well,
when we do it here?
I can't explain that because I'm not a Democrat. The Democrats do that. Republicans do not do the Texas Two-Step.
I know what you're talking about.
They caucus, and then they... I don't even know. It's confusing to me. They used to have the same system that we had, but then during the 2008 election, they changed it so that they would have to do they want to caucus just like they do in Iowa, and then they want to pick people to go to the convention as well. I don't understand their system. So you'll have to ask. I was so confused.
It's something to do with you got to vote in the morning and then come back and vote again in the evening. And I thought, you mean my one vote is not enough?
Well, if you join the Republican Party, you won't be confused anymore.
What happens if electoral don't vote the way that the
there's nothing
the
you can do.
There's no.
I mean, that's called an unfaithful elector. But there's nothing that you can do about it.
And in actuality, that happened last election.
It's happened several times.
One more question. If it's 269-269, then what happens?
It gets thrown to the House of Representatives.
And the House of Representatives will pick Romney because
yes,
they're
they
Republican,
will.
Right?
Yep.
And then the Senate will pick Biden because they're Democrat, right?
Right.
The Senate doesn't have any say, I don't think.
For the Vice President, they do. For the Vice President, not the President, but for the Vice President, because the Vice President
is the President of the Senate.
Yeah.
Okay, yo, let me ask you this. Is this really, and I think I asked this in the last show, but I'd like to know what this panel thinks. Is this pretty much the most important election of your lifetime? Because it has been for me in my lifetime.
Every election is the most important election because each election says what direction are we going to go in the next 4 years. And that's why, I mean, you know, 2 years ago, I mean, 8 years ago, 4 years ago, they were saying those were the most important. I remember in 2000, we said the same thing. Every one of them are important because we are a country that actually picks its leaders from among us. No one is born with a superior right to rule, unlike in monarchical societies like in Great Britain and things like that.
Now, you know, me and Mr. Stockton had a conversation earlier this week, y'all. He had me, like, rolling. Mr. Stockton, we were talking about who has the more motivated voter at this point. And you felt like the Republicans had the more motivated voter at this point. Tell us why, and y'all, I'm just because it's funny, I'm having to repeat it. Tell us why the Democrats don't have the more motivated voter at this point.
I think we were talking about the voter ID law in relation to the voter ID law, why Democrats are against that.
Right.
Is that what you're talking about?
I think it was.
Yeah, the reason that they're really against it, and it's a little bit of ugly truth that they don't really want to voice too much, and that is that they know that they have lazy voters. They know that some of their voters are.
I don't believe that, y'all, but he believes it. But go ahead.
Well, let me explain. There was a panel discussion on C-SPAN with some Harvard alumni. One of them was an elected official, Arthur Davis. At the time, he was a Democrat. He's since switched to Republican. And I'm sorry, I don't remember this lady's name on the panel, but she said, look, in 2008, Pookie got up off the couch, if you know what I mean. I'm almost quoting her verbatim. And she said, you know who Pookie is. She said, Pookie doesn't do anything, you know. And so he felt connected. In this one particular election, he felt connected. Mm-hmm. And he got up off the couch. She said, Pookie may not feel that motivated in 2012. And so what she was saying is that we don't want to put any impediments in front of Pookie, because Pookie's the kind of person that may not have his driver's license, his driver's license may have been suspended. He just may not feel motivated to go get the free ID that it's going to take for him to vote. And they know this about their voters. If you, I've often told people this when I give speeches, early voting and a lot of these things that make it easier and more convenient for you to vote, these things were put in place by Democrats. In Texas, I know this is to be the truth. When Texas was dominated by Democrats, what they found is that it wasn't enough to give blacks and other minorities the right to vote. It was hard to motivate them to vote because all they saw was one white dude being elected over another white dude. Well, in 2008, they felt connected to Barack Obama, and they wanted to see the first black president, and they wanted to be a part of that. And so all these people who are usually just let elections slide over them, because if you know about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, voting really is at the top of that pyramid. You know, you have to secure all your other things. Because I trust you, somebody living up under the bridge, he's not having this conversation.
No.
But, right. But you know, if you've solidified the lower and the middle parts of your Maslow's pyramid, then, yeah, you're probably concerned about voting. When you own a house, you're concerned about the schools. You're concerned about taxes and those kinds of things. But if you're Pookie and you're sitting on the edge of the couch and you're watching reruns of the People's Court, you probably ain't having this kind of conversation with your boys when you're standing around smoking a blunt. And so they kind of know this about their voters, and they want to make it easy for them to vote. And so they came up with early voting and motor voter, because Republicans are far more loyal and far more self-motivated. White people in general feel far more enfranchised in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they want to vote, well, most low-income people, they're just not interested in that. They feel like everybody who's low-income and minority, that's their voter. And so they want to come up. They didn't want to come up with any reasons, and voter ID is one of those things that they feel like, well, that margin, that small margin of people that I've just spoke of. Of course, that's not everybody. Okay, I don't want to make it out like I'm saying that's everybody. But there is a small margin of people who live on the edge of society, and they're worried that that will be the margin of victory that they will lose with the voter ID bill.
Let me just add a footnote to what you just said, and that is because once a black gets elected to office, it is a lifetime appointment. There is tremendous apathy in the black community in terms of voter turnout. John Conyers gets elected each year, and when John Conyers has been in the House forever, but when John stepped up to run for the mayor of Detroit, he came in sixth behind everybody, so he went on back and stayed in the House. And it's because of the apathy that, well, they're in there, and so it's very difficult to overcome the voter apathy, particularly when it's been politically monolithic for decades.
The other gentleman was going to say something, but you jumped in.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you from Texas? Because you got a Texas accent.
Am I from Texas?
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm from Chicago.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. You remind me of Renoka Rashida. But you know, I'm going to tell you something else that you see white Democrats do. Well, they don't seem like they're getting in place the normal way. Then they go to the preachers. And you got preachers out campaigning, or should I say making advertisements for white elected officials like we have here in Missouri.
Yeah.
We have a elected Nixon who's running for governor. And I remember about maybe 10 years ago, Nixon was here in the city making bad comments about the school systems, and blacks was really outrageous against him. But now here he is running for governor, and his only outlet of reaching the black population is through the preachers. So he got preachers out doing commercials for him.
And a lot of those preachers cost about $5,000 each.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what a lot of times is not talked about over on the Democrat side, is the payola and the payola that they actually pay. They give money to people. I mean, it really is pay to play.
Wait. Now, you know that's on both sides of the aisle. Come on now.
No, I'm going to tell you, look, I've been involved in Republican politics for over 10 years. If it happens, I've never seen it. On my side, I've never seen it. But it's just a different world. Republicans are more motivated by policies. I mean, we want free markets and all these other things, and we own businesses, and we're concerned about collectivism. So there's a bit of self-motivation in there. I think that – look.
So
I'm
you don't
thinking,
think there's any motivated Democrats?
No. Well, it is,
well,
but it's
well, look,
wrong
I won't say, that because
they
I'm sure
pretty good in the way.
In the wrong direction.
I'm sure that there are plenty of Democrats who believe in a more activist government that they believe in. They're true Democrats, true liberals. But in a lot of cases, when you come into the black neighborhood, I have literally seen, and other Democrats have told me this, that they get what's called walking around money.
You know, I'm not on either side tonight. I really am not. But that's just unfair. Now, you know I know that there's money under the table on both sides.
Look,
I'm just telling you,
a lot of your panels here tonight are feigning naivete for some reason. I don't know.
The last few minutes, what we've been talking about.
It's the difference between proactive, which is usually the GOP, and reactive, which is Democrats. Let me just say, in terms of black, may I make a comment?
Let me just say there's some structural reasons why blacks vote that way, too, and that is 2 out of 10 whites with college education works for government. 6 out of 10 blacks with college education works for government. So a lot of our educated middle class are anchored in government,
mm-hmm.
and therefore have proprietary and interest in people who and the party that supports more government.
And
we're
Jesse
teachers,
Jackson,
we're
and Jesse Jackson made that very point.
What?
Jesse Jackson made that very
see,
point.
That's why
there
you see 87%.
There was a time when more government, when the majority of whites didn't mind more government. Okay, when you had the New Deals, when you had the veterans coming home from the service and they were getting all these perks and everything and getting these incentives and getting extra points on these civil service exams, they weren't complaining about large government then. Okay, so, you know, it boggles my mind when everybody becomes a CPA whenever they see larger government in favor
of
Democrats.
Well, first of all, let me just
whatever.
Say to you, there every tax loophole started as a tax incentive.
Mm.
So things that the New Deal was supposed to have been an ambulance service, not a whole transportation system.
Thank you.
And so you do things, you have strategic interests that apply when circumstances are at a certain point, and then those strategic interests change, and then therefore your position has to change. So there's nothing illogical about that. It's just that when you have a disaster, you're going to be engaged in certain activities that undo certain things that you wouldn't do under circumstances. But once the conditions that created the disaster are removed, then your response is more normal, and you go back and doing something else. So the New Deal, again, was supposed to have been an ambulance service that morphed into a whole way of life.
But, see, that is the problem when you come outside.
You're going to need, if you vote for Romney, you're going to need a surgeon service.
What do you guys think Romney's
going to do for the economy?
But, see, that's
all
why.
What do you think
Romney's
going to create jobs like he did in his private equity company?
Oh, like he did with KB Toys and Unimac and Ampad and DDI?
And Staples. And some of the other companies that are around today, yeah. In any kind of economy, there are losers and there's winners. That some companies don't make it and others do.
If you just tuned in,
that's what the capitalist system is all about.
They just make it.
If you just tuned in, you've come to Center Stage tonight for the topic, who's getting your vote on Election Day Part 2. We're talking to Robert Woodson Sr., Chris Stevenson, Thelma Tormina, and Paul Stockard. If you're trying to get into the chat room tonight, we are down. So if you have a question or a comment for this panel, you need to get on the phone lines. Call us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. Again, if you're trying to get into the chat room tonight, the chat room is down. You'll need to get on the phone lines to pose your question or comment to this panel by dialing us up at 347-850-8390 and then again, press 1. Listen, did anybody check out all three debates? I checked out part of the first one, and I must admit I did not finish, and I did not hear the other two debates. Did anybody?
I listened to all three of them.
Oh, good.
I watched them all.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
I saw most of the first one, just a little bit of the second and third.
Okay, tell us what you saw from the debate. I mean, looking at both candidates.
I saw all three also.
Okay, so looking at all three debates or part of one debate, what did you get from the debate? Which candidate did you really, not based on your party affiliations, but which candidate did you really feel pull forward just based on the debate?
It was Romney. I mean, the debate definitely helped Romney more than it helped Barack Obama. What the debates did for Barack Obama was to really show him unvarnished, where he didn't have a teleprompter, he wasn't in front of a adoring crowd, fainting and screaming his name, and he actually had to stand up and defend his policies. And we also found out, you know, who he really was. He was able to hide behind. A lot of people fell in love with all that flowery rhetoric. And this is what I said this to you when we were talking before, is that no one would have been elected to he got elected. This was an affirmative action election because he would have never been – a white guy would have never got into the Oval Office with that thin of a resume and that shrouded of a background.
A white guy with Obama's accomplishments over the last few years would be considered the greatest president ever probably. What are you talking about?
Are you the same one that's saying that Romney wants to take your uterus?
You're the same one that's saying that, right?
That's right.
Wait.
That's right. He's going to take more than that.
Oh my God.
Well, Washington Post came out with an article said that 2/3 of the jobs over his 4 years was illegal immigrants.
He created with the stimulus money went to illegal immigrants.
The thing is still in progress, just like the health care thing. Yeah, for some reason, everybody wanted Obama to come up with some miracle in 4 years.
Let me tell you something.
He came on like the second coming.
Listen, but Obama said that if I can't do it in 3 years, vote me out. It was Obama who said, if I can't fix this stuff in 3 years, y'all should not invite me back. Did he not say that?
Much of it is on its way to being fixed.
I asked you a question. Did not Obama say?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did say that.
All right.
Yes.
Well, then why isn't he keeping his word?
He is keeping his word.
Liar.
It's just that
he said he should not vote him back if he doesn't do it in 3 years.
Let me ask some questions. Switch it up a little bit.
That's before we knew Romney was running. Okay.
I mean, you really are an interesting person.
Let me switch it up. Is the Roe versus Wade decision in jeopardy if we end up with the Romney-Ryan ticket?
No.
What was your question? I'm sorry.
Is the Roe v. Wade decision
in jeopardy if Romney is elected?
Absolutely not.
Really? Okay.
You guys really believe this?
Because Ryan is a little scary. What can the president do about Roe v. Wade?
Carrie.
Yes.
Do I get to talk here?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Listen, guys, Roe v. Wade is a woman thing, okay? And I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of times in the past I might have decided my vote on that particular issue, but this time it isn't bothering me a bit. Number one, the president isn't going to have anything to do with that. That's in the Supreme Court. It's already been decided, and it's been taken care of. It's going to be hell to try to get that overturned. So if any Democratic woman is out there, hush up a minute. if anyone out there, especially a female, is concerned over the abortion issue and they're not voting for Romney because of it, that is just stupid and it's just crazy. And I'm telling you that right now. And I'm not necessarily.
What he's gonna do.
Excuse me?
This is the guy that's telling you right up front what he's going to do.
Who?
He's telling you right up front. Who picks the judges? Who picks the Supreme Court judges?
Excuse me. Just 1 minute. Something else seems to be missing.
For you.
Will you be quiet for a minute?
Okay, y'all, we got about 30 minutes left to wrap this up. But Thelma, you're saying you don't think it's in jeopardy at all?
No.
You know, switching the guard to the Supreme Court is not going to. Okay.
No,
gotcha.
I don't think it's in jeopardy at all, and I'm really not concerned with that issue at this point in time. And to be perfectly honest, when everybody in this country finally wakes up and realizes that Americans are responsible to stand up for their own rights, it doesn't matter who's in the presidency. We must stand up for our own rights.
Exactly.
I'm not saying don't go vote, but I'm saying that we have to get this country back to where it's morally and ethically in the right course, or we aren't going to get out of the hole that we're in, and we must get Obama out.
I'm for one of the against abortion myself, because I've seen the devastation of it. But this thing where you can give a 14-year-old girl can have a morning after pill without parental
She has to have a permission
totally
slip to get on a bus to go on a trip, but
that
not
totally
to have an abortion. Isn't that amazing? She
and
needs permission from her parents to go on a trip to a zoo. But
yeah,
she can be counseled and given a morning after pill without parental permission. That's sick.
And what also foreign policy that Obama has with he's funding this Planned Parenthood for the international operations that they're doing. They're showing up in African countries where they're trying to influence officials not to revise their constitution that states that life begins at conception. And also he's threatening to cut aid if they don't open up their societies to same-sex marriage and more
That's
so
right.
homosexuality.
That's exactly
That's totally
what they're
ridiculous.
Threatening. Hillary Clinton already said that.
Yeah, we talked about that a little earlier. Listen, you know, the wars that we've been fighting have been going on for a while. Which candidate is likely to go into Iran? I mean, seriously, I really question how close we are to that. Which candidate is most likely to take us into a conflict with Iran?
Carrie, I don't think that it's going to be up to the president whether or not that happens. I think that's going to be up to whatever happens over in that region.
And Israel's going to make that decision.
Yeah, it isn't going to be up to our president
Israel's,
to make Israel, that decision.
Israel doesn't care who's president. If they feel that Iran has that bomb that's going to point it towards them, they're going to take them out.
Yep.
Well, generals have
that's true, but I understand Romney was talking about
too,
Russia.
Generals have been saying leave Iran alone. Because one thing, we don't have the money to be fighting it doing that.
Right. Yeah, but we don't have control over what every other country does. So that will be determined by Israel. It won't be determined by the United States of America.
But won't America back Israel?
Well, sure, we'll
Absolutely.
Back them, but that doesn't mean that we're going to be the one to say, yeah, go in or don't go in, Carrie. It's not going to be our decision.
But
well,
no, I'm saying we shouldn't go in at all
if it was
us. Look, if we've got to go in to help protect one of our allies, we have to. That's America. And whether you like it or you don't like it, that is who we are. And neither president will be able to say no, because if they say no, they'll be coming after us next.
Well, me, myself, on that question, I think we need to kick Israel on the bus. That $4 billion we give her every year, we could be using that here, doing something else constructive with putting Americans back to work, helping schools, and helping those soldiers that's sleeping under bridges to be able to do something better with their lives.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think
I'll be throwing Israel
issue.
Out of the boat. I'll tell you that right now.
I want Israel exactly where they are doing what they do. I think they are the one stabilizing force in the Middle East.
Yep.
Okay, y'all, let's go back to the phone lines. Let's pick up area code 843-276. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hey, how you doing? It's T. Smitty. How you doing today?
Fine, T. Smitty. How are you?
Doing great. Another wonderful, beautiful day in Phoenix, you know. All right. To answer your topic, I'm kind of holding my nose while I'm voting for Obama.
Yeah. And you're a military guy.
Yeah. For the next year, and I'll be Mrs. Smith again this time next year.
Okay. Why?
I'm getting out. Well, I don't think I want to do with my life, and I don't want to be at 20 years, and they say, yeah, the private sector too long, and we're not going to hire your black behind. So, yeah, if they don't tell you that part, if you're out of private sector too long, they like, hey, you got to do our training. You're not caught, you know, and that's the stuff that people don't know. There's a lot of retired vets. Some of them have degrees. They can't find a job, you know, and you've been doing something for 20 plus years. And then you want to go out in that civilian sector. They just say, hey, you haven't done it for us. How do we know you had a training for our type of work? Just cause I want to be an independent recruiter one day. And I got talked to one of those big time in civilian world. He told me they don't even care about military recruiting experience. They're like, are you worried about how you do in the private sector, not the public sector? And so that's some of that stuff that they don't look at. But also what I was saying is, I think the president, I know he has a lot of opposition from the Republican Party. Heck, to be honest, I don't think he wants to be president anymore. He is, you know.
I agree with him. I totally agree. I don't. From that first debate, he looked like he wished he was some other place.
Because think about it.
No
other president's wife has been attacked like him. Think about this. No other president's wife has even been attacked like his. So he has to deal with that as well, too.
Oh, please.
People make comments about his wife and stuff, you know. And the thing, also, everything he tried to do, he's been opposed on. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he handled the economy that well. But the thing is, I felt like that he's a better option than Mitt Romney, who's going to run this country like a CEO. We know how a lot of these CEOs are nowadays, and expect the military the same way now. Less people, more work, more money in their pocket. If they get the same or more production with less people, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Mitt Romney got rich off of crushing small companies with bank capital.
Mm-hmm.
And who do you think will do these other small
companies?
But
he had a fiduciary duty to do. He can be prosecuted if he didn't carry that fiduciary duty out to the best interest of his shareholders.
Yeah. And so what he did
got nothing to do with duty. All right, listen, Mitt Romney is not a venture capitalist. He's a vulture capitalist. All right, that's plain and simple.
God.
You go to the people who are working at Staples and tell them that.
Have you look at all the people
at Staples and many other companies like that are working. Go in there and tell them that Bain Capital wasn't good for them. Even Bill Clinton said that is not true. Wait a minute. Even Bill Clinton said that is not true of Romney, as well as others. So if it's good enough for Bill Clinton, it ought to be good enough for you.
No, it's not, because we got a company here in Buffalo that was an offshoot of AMPAD. They shut down. There's 218 people out of work. You call them. Mr. Blinded by Romney. No, you don't work for that guy.
You've been drinking the Kool-Aid, my friend.
No, I've been drinking the Kool-Aid.
You've been drinking the Obama aid.
This is common sense aid. That's all it is.
No.
Okay,
well,
I'm going to break this election down to you. This election is the closest thing to good versus evil in a long, long time. Okay? All this anti-Obama talk that you guys have been listening to, for some reason you've opened your ears to it, and it is not good. All right, and this is, and they've told you, they made you feel
we're
guilty
the victim of racism.
For being black,
and
voting for a black
we're
person.
We're the victim of racism, man. That's you're right.
Can I ask y'all a question
though?
Can I ask y'all a question though? Because I'm not gonna lie, I don't care who anyone votes for. You know, that's your business. But for the ones who think Romney is the greatest in sliced bread since the man never even given out his plan yet, in all fairness, what can he do that's better than what Obama's doing right now? Because I feel like he's in office, nothing's going to change anyway.
Well, honestly, at least he won't be taking our rights away from us.
Yeah, I don't think
Obama's out there taking our rights away from us.
What's
three
right?
We have three people
right
on a panel who have Mitt Romney's tax returns on them, so obviously they must know what they're talking about.
He gave a larger percentage of his income toward charity than Obama did.
We have a market.
He makes more than Obama.
Who cares about charities?
He probably gave more to NAACP than Obama did.
Well, we know the NAACP ain't helped out black folks 20, 30 years.
Don't get started on the NAACP.
Okay, let me ask a question. One thing I am concerned about, though, with this administration, all the executive orders that have been put in place under the Obama administration, why have they been necessary? We have a sitting Congress, so why have we had so many executive orders?
Actually,
because their number one goal is to make him a one. See, center stage, it's a problem. And Boehner and these other guys have said it straight out on national TV. Their number one goal is to make President Obama a one-term president at the expense of the American people. They said it.
Exactly.
When Bush was the president, do you not think that was the goal of the Democrats as well? I mean,
Republicans spent a lot of money.
I would like an answer to my question. Do you not
Obama
think that was their goal
no
as well?
Obama hasn't done no more deals than any other president at this point in time.
We can't hear you. Okay. Did you say what, Mr. Stockard?
I was asking, do you not think that that was also the goal of the Democrats when Bush was the president? It is always the goal of the opposite party to make a president of the opposite party a one-term
Democrats
president.
They didn't officially say that, during, and I couldn't stand
so
that.
So what? They don't have to. It's obvious.
Okay. Number two, Bush was never elected. He was selected.
But everything wasn't blocked.
In all honesty on that question, Obama haven't done no more EOs than any other president at this point in their tenure. Maybe just a few, but not no more.
Maybe just a few. Oh, I love that.
Like 149 and 146. So, you know, that's not that.
I think the executive orders that he has put forward, though, it is questionable whether it's constitutional. Like he's using executive orders as a substitute for the legislative process.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And there's been quite a few. I mean, I'm just putting that out there. That's I'm just putting it out there. Listen, in light of Hurricane Sandy, out in the New York area, the New Jersey area, and all those places where there's massive flooding, is that going to affect the vote up there?
Who? You know what's in the stage? I'm not gonna lie. I bet Obama's probably like, good gracious, couldn't this hurricane wait another week? It's the thing.
Obama is gonna blame that on Bush too.
You know what I think though? See, it's the thing. We hear Republican BS talking about we don't want big government. Keep the government out of our business. But as soon as these storms hit, what they do? Mr. President, can you please give us some money to bail us out because we don't want to pay our 25% of our own money? And that's how they say they don't raise taxes.
You know how sad that is? When we got hit with a hurricane down here, nobody went running to the federal government. We took care of ourselves. And when FEMA was here, they were useless, absolutely useless. So don't be saying that. You have a lot of poor people up there without power, can't get gas, can't get food. FEMA's not getting to them. So don't just say it's the rich Republicans that are having a fit because Obama isn't doing his job.
Hold on. Mind you, hold on. First, what state do you live in, you mind me asking?
Texas.
Texas, okay. See, this is the thing. Everybody talking about take care of yourselves. If you take care of yourselves, how about you don't ask the president for money? I'm saying these presidents, these governors, these Republican governors who are saying keep the government out your business, but they don't say nothing about big government when they fund that military or other stuff that benefits them or fund the FCC when they're talking about telling you what you can and can't say on TV or the radio.
Flipping crazy. Texas does its own thing all the time. And by the way, I originally grew up in New York, upstate New York. I am not someone who just lived in a state all my life where people believed they could take care of themselves. I have believed that as an individual all of my life. And you're trying to say that these supposedly rich white people up in New York City are whining and crying because they want help. Excuse me, there's a lot of poor people that live in that city that are without power, without food, without gas, and nothing is being done.
You're missing my point.
Well, you know, Bloomberg told Obama not to. He said Bloomberg told Obama.
One at a time, y'all.
No, thank you. The mayor of New York told Obama no thank you, and plus that, the state governor would have to ask the federal government to come in for help anyway.
Okay, y'all, let's switch it up a bit because we're down to almost our last 15 minutes. Obama thought that it was a good idea to bail out the auto industry, and he did. Romney said he wouldn't have. What do you all think? Was it a good thing to bail out the auto industry? Did Obama
That's
do the right
exactly
thing? Was Romney right? They should have went through a form of bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy.
Yes, they
should have gone through bankruptcy. And then that's what he said. He stated he qualified it in saying they should have gone through bankruptcy so they can abandon those union contracts and get prices back down under control.
And
the real problem is
anyway.
No, Carrie, here's what people overlook. With the way that Obama did it, all those people who had invested money to begin with in those car companies are the ones who lost money. And all of those small, family-owned car dealerships that got shut down lost their family businesses, and a lot of people were out of work from those dealerships. He didn't save the auto industry. All he did was do a government takeover of the auto industry, and a lot of people got hurt in the meantime, but nobody ever talks about them.
And I agree with it. What really happened,
I guess that GM guy, that the executive that said Obama saved the auto industry was lying.
Well, he said that what Romney said about the Jeep. But here's the point. If they had went through a bankruptcy, they would have been restructured. If they took government money, they would have restructured anyway. Thus, they cut their salaries. Either way.
Well, bankruptcy restructures you all right. Romney also, later on tried to take credit for that.
For what?
Feel like he did the Olympics? Feel like he did the Olympics? That he used the government money for? And the government had no business doing that? But you know what, though, ma'am? But
yeah,
you know one
God
thing, ma'am?
Well,
the one thing
Olympics,
that I, don't get me wrong, I don't think he should have bailed them out because they're not, all they're going to do to me, I feel like that. And I've been to the Middle East, deployed to the Middle East, where I've seen, you see these big buildings erected with American names. These bases have 100-plus-year contracts for to stay out there. You got bus drivers who make 80-some thousand while the troops make 40. But my thing is about the auto industry, I don't think he should have bailed him out, but that's one thing I thought about. I don't know if he thought about this. I don't know. There's a lot of people also, people make uniforms, people make all kind of different stuff as well, who is also affected as well. You know, the uniform maker, people probably make tires, whatever. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. So he might.
The auto industry is just some cars. I guess it has no effect on the overall American economy. So, I guess.
Well, GM does because GM is also a defense contractor. Right, sir?
Yeah. Hey, Boeing, all those guys. And see, the thing is what I'm saying. And one thing, I'm kind of going off on a mild tangent here, me being in the military. One, I just feel like that a lot of these people are so. Don't even know the issues they're talking about, just saying, oh, because he's believing God. It's all kind of stuff. I just feel like that, being in, you talking about, now I'm in the Air Force, but I think we had guys get killed and stuff, lose their families, all kind of stuff, to make $45,000. Mm-hmm. But yet those people whose kids will never go to war, now mind you, I know they signed up for it. That's why I'm getting out of there. but the thing is that, one, they're the ones that draw up these budgets, talking about doing cuts. Also, they're people who line their pockets, these contractors. I see it every day, who make it $200,000+ a year to do the same job we're doing.
I don't think anybody's going to disagree with you on that, but here's a question I got for you. The American people really do love the U.S. military. And really, the Republicans, and I can tell you this only because I'm surrounded by them, they really feel that the servicemen and women should be paid more, and that instead of having all of these commercials where you need charity in order to take care of our military members, our government's first priority was supposed to always be our military, that you were taken care of when you were in and that you were taken care of when you got out. And it's not just the presidency that has control over that. It's Congress, too, and we're trying to change that because we really do believe in our U.S. military personnel. But Obama, I mean, I'm surprised you'd say you'd vote for Obama after what's happened in Benghazi. I mean,
well,
I have
know
of no other man, I don't know of no other man who wouldn't have sent every troop possible to rescue Americans in that kind of danger.
Which, but
and
you
he
know,
did
you
nothing.
Also consider, you also have to consider, too, you got the day is a volunteer force compared to what was going on in Vietnam when they were snatching people off the street. Those
right,
that got
right.
hurt in Vietnam was not taken care of. So these that's being volunteer, come on, you're going to have a different look at them than what we did when we were drafting people.
No. I grew up during the Vietnam era. I have the same view of the military as now as I did then. I love them.
I don't, because nobody's drafting people today. They're volunteering to go in for the money or whatever, and you have to look at it different.
I tell you, it's like this.
Obama did one thing good. He slashed military spending, okay? We don't have to blow up the world 300 times, all right? And that and he took the nukes off the submarines and put Tomahawks on there. All right, people complaining about the drones. Bush and Cheney were bombing whole cities. All right, so
you're absolutely right.
You know,
but as far as protecting us, I'm still waiting on the communists to come into my neighborhood from Vietnam. They ain't came yet. The food's that cold.
And you know one thing though, because I had like this class I took. One, there are plenty of Republican congressmen, including John McCain out here in Arizona, who didn't want the post 9/11 GI Bill, where like we got hooked up a little bit more education benefits, and they also tried the Republican led Congress tried they were cutting a lot of benefits. They had to fight to keep our education benefits. And like
Republicans will make soldiers fight for free if they could get away with it.
Oh my God, that's not fair.
You really are on a different planet, man. You have drank a ton of that.
Look at the way Bush treated the troops right immediately after 9/11,
man.
Listen, okay, you know what? We're down to our last 8-9 minutes of the show. Let's switch it up just a bit on the end. First of all, just for anybody who may be out there that's still not decided as to who you're going to vote for, you know, you have a lot of views and opinions out here tonight. But Mr. Stocker made a very good point this week when he said something. We were talking about, you know, if you say I'm voting for the person, not the party. And Mr. Stocker, do you remember when we talked about that, what your comment was to that? And I never thought about it like that, because I myself have thought before, you know, I may not like this guy's party, but I'm going to vote for the guy because I like the person. I like the candidate. Mr. Stocker, what was your response to that?
Yeah, that's a pseudo-intellectual trick that people pull because they don't really know what's going on, but they like to appear to be above it all. And so they say, well, I'm voting for the person, not the party. But that's ridiculous, because when you vote for the person, you are voting for the party. Politics is the only game that you can play where you are actually allowed to have more players on the field than your opponent. In fact, that's the object of the game. Politics is about power. So when you vote for a person, you are voting to strengthen one team over the other. The reason that people do, and it's ridiculous, if you are voting that way, you shouldn't vote, because you're not voting for a celebrity. You are voting for a set of ideals to move those set of ideas forward. So if you're voting for the person, in this case, I believe this was how Barack Obama won. He was a great celebrity. Look at all the shows he's on. I mean, he's on David Letterman and The View more times than any other movie star. And so when you say that, I just know whenever I hear people say that, I know they don't know what they're talking about, because they don't understand politics. No one person is a party.
Barack Obama was on TV more than Howdy Doody.
That was just wrong. Okay.
At least he wasn't at the ranch.
Kerry,
what is this?
Let me make just one last comment, and then I'll leave everybody alone.
Okay, go ahead, Bella.
You know, and I'll probably not, unless people do their homework and do their background, they're never going to believe this. But in the truth of the whole matter, this election is the most important election of our lifetime. If Obama goes back into office for 4 years, you will see that the United States of America will no longer be a sovereign nation. We will no longer have the freedoms. We will lose our personal property rights, and we will lose the rights to our own body. That is going to happen under Barack Obama. He is a Marxist. He believes in the Marxist philosophy. He believes in redistribution of wealth. His idea of Christianity is where they take and redistribute. It's not your own giving. And for those reasons, I am voting for Mitt Romney. It doesn't have anything to do with parties. It's the idea that we need to save freedom because our children will live as slaves if we don't save it now. And that's all I'm going to say.
Wow. Chris Stevenson, your final comment.
I'm speechless. I think there's been too much overthinking regarding Obama that's gotten way off base. But I agree with what she said, but just in the direction of Mitt Romney.
Wow. Wow. Mr. Woodson, your final comment.
I believe that, as the sister said, that this is one of the most important elections, and I do believe that Obama stands for governmentalism. He really does believe that we the people is synonymous with government, and I think that this nation will be in decline morally, materially will be in decline, and I think the whole gay marriage thing is going to destroy our reputation around the world as we try to impose our views. It's going to radicalize Muslims against us and others who do not subscribe to the whole gay marriage thing that we are forcing on other nations.
Okay, we're going to let Piansky say something, then we're going to close out with Paul Stockard. Piansky,
well,
your final comment, even though you weren't on the panel tonight.
I really appreciate it, and I really love the way everyone here is having a real cordial, civilized conversation. And I think that I'm not totally decided yet. I think that the U.S. debt is the most pressing thing against the security of the United States, our children's future. That needs to be taken care of. When Romney say he's going to increase military by $1 trillion, and when Obama say he's going to only decrease it like $100 million a year for the next 10 years or 20 years, both of them are still kind of off base on that, I think.
Mr. Stockard, close us out tonight.
You know, I pretty much agree with most of the comments of my panelists, particularly what the gentleman had to say about the debt. You know, that $16 trillion, it's unspeakable. I think that this is an important election, and I think it's time for adults to stand up and vote. You know, one of the things I do is I never encourage people to vote because there are a lot of people that shouldn't vote because they don't know what they're voting for. We really do. We have a lot of stupid people who vote. And what I try to do is I'll encourage them to go get ice cream on that day instead of going to the polls because I'd rather have
you encourage some people not to vote.
I don't encourage them not to vote. I just don't encourage them to vote because I have more respect for people who disagree with me honestly, who know why they believe what they believe, rather than somebody who's just blindly going to the polls because, well, they like one person over the other. That's not an informed voter. And what we want is informed voters. It's the reason why there's so much money in politics. It's really to sway the uninformed voter. It's not really.
What if they were
going to
vote for Romney?
Let the man have the last word, man.
Yeah, I was just saying that I want an informed voter. Even if that's you who knows that you're an honest liberal, you believe in these things, I have more respect for you than just somebody who's just blindly, well, look, I like this guy. I'm voting for him. I don't like those kind of voters. Because they muddy the waters. They vote for your candidate this election cycle, then they vote for my candidate the next election cycle. What I want is an informed electorate. And the problem is that we have people who have not had an adult conversation with themselves as to how they feel about these weighty issues of the day. A little while back, we had the replacement refs in the NFL, and you saw people arguing passionately about this. But then the real issues, like this $16 trillion debt and many other issues, they are completely silent on because they don't know what they're talking about. Those are the issues that we should care about, and that's why I want informed voters to go to the polls and vote. Now, of course, I want you to elect Mitt Romney, and I believe he's going to win.
Wow. Listen, that's going to be the final comment tonight. I'd like to say thank you to all my guests, Selma Tormina, Robert L. Woodson Sr., Chris Stevenson, and Paul Stocker. Also, a reminder, y'all, the views and opinions that you heard tonight are not necessarily those of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, election night, November 6th, join me right here from 8 to 10 p.m. We're going to be talking about election night results. Let's talk about it. You tell me what you think. Was there some voter fraud at your polling place? Was there some ID issues that they addressed at your polling place? Let's talk about it. November 6th from 8 to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. Again, thank you to my guests. Thank you, the audience, for listening. And I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.
Bye-bye.
Bye.